Answering Mormons Questions by Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson deals with 36 commonly asked questions by your LDS friends and neighbors. It's a great resource for Christians who want to share their faith with friends and loved ones. Be sure to pick up your copy today at your favorite Christian bookstore. Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Michael and Lynn Wilder. Lynn is the author of Unveiling Grace, the True Story of How We Found Our Way Out of the Mormon Church, published by Zondervan. Should be available in, I would imagine, just about every Christian bookstore, and as well as some secular bookstores. Mm-hmm. If we could just get this thing in Deseret, that would be great too. And hopefully they would read this story, because you write very well, Lynn. I was really enjoying this. You really get into this, and you feel like a part of the family the way you wrote. And you get to know the family members and all the triumphs and trials that you go through. And there certainly were a lot of both, you might say, mm-hmm. in your story. Yesterday, we were talking about your conversion and how it was Michael's fault that he allowed the Mormon missionaries to come in August of 1977 because he was bored working on, what was it, a master's thesis? But anyway, you've made the transition into Mormonism. You're living in Indiana, and now you're going to be asked to come to Utah for an interview, I believe, right?
Right.
With Brigham Young University.
Mm-hmm.
And your bishop gives you a little warning about what Utah is like.
Mm.
And so where we left off with that is the bishop said that you probably wouldn't like it because the Mormons out here, I get the impression, are different than everywhere else. And, you know, I've noticed that the Mormons that I knew in California, a lot of them seem to be much more serious about their Mormonism than a lot of the Mormons that you see here. That could be a stereotype. I don't know. It's just something that I've experienced. But you talk about feeling somewhat like a second-class citizen. Why don't you explain why that was?
Mormonism's really interesting. You're kind of who you are based on what you did in the pre-existence. We must have been less than perfect in the pre-existence because we didn't come into strong Mormon homes. We were born into Christian homes, and I didn't really realize that made me a second-class citizen in Mormonism, because in the mission field, everybody was converts. But here in Utah, most everybody was generational, and we as converts were really unusual. In fact, when I interviewed with the general authority for my position at BYU, he said, "Wow, I've been interviewing faculty for BYU for many years, and I've never come across somebody like you." And I said, "How's that?" And he said, "You were not trained at BYU. You've never lived in Utah." And I thought, wow, all of my BYU colleagues are going to be BYU trained, and they're going to be generational members of the church. And he said, "You're a convert."
Well, you mentioned something, and I think we should clarify for a lot of our listeners, is how, according to Mormon theology, your behavior in what Mormons call the pre-existence, because Mormonism teaches that we all existed as spirit children of our heavenly parents, and we could only progress so far, making it necessary to come into this mortality, or what they call a mortal probation. And depending on how we behaved in the pre-existence has some type of determination as to your social status here in this mortal probation. In other words, if you were really, really good in the pre-existence, you would probably be born with white skin, maybe living in Utah, certainly in a Mormon family.
Mm-hmm.
And really, really good, you would have the same last name as probably a past president or a past apostle. And I cannot imagine why that wouldn't affect a Mormon's humility factor. I mean, knowing that, well, look where I am, I must have really done something quite well. And so here you come into the picture, and you don't have a lot of those spiritual credentials.
The other thing that matters here in Utah is your calling. So when I was at BYU, we had to keep a vita of my callings. It mattered whether you been a stake president or, you know, whether you'd been a Relief Society president. Those kind of things are important in Mormonism.
When you were working at BYU, did you feel anything from your colleagues about this? I mean, did you feel comfortable working among any of them?
I loved my colleagues, but there were incidences where it was clear that converts probably weren't at the same level that other people who were generational.
I don't know if a lot of non-Mormons understand that or even know that. And you kind of hear rumors of that. But of course, I was never LDS, so I can't say that I ever experienced anything like that firsthand, because I certainly didn't. But it was fascinating reading that in the book about the feelings that you had. Now, you lived in Alpine, which Alpine is just south of the point of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
You're just south of the prison. Okay. And you're living in a very nice neighborhood. You love here. You talk about how you love the mountains and you were able to go hiking. You were right near Lone Peak. And people listening to this that aren't in Utah are probably wondering, what in the world am I talking about? But if you live here, you know what I'm talking about, because you know the geography. So you're enjoying life otherwise here in Utah. And your kids are now getting to the age where they're getting ready to go on a mission. So Josh was the first.
Josh went to Russia and Belarus.
And mm-hmm. you talk about his difficulty in coming back, mm-hmm. the cultural shock, how he kept wanting to speak in Russian and how he wanted Russian food. And I've been to Russia 3 times. I don't know what he saw in the food over there. I just could not get used to that over there. It wasn't all that great for me. But a good experience for him?
Yes, a good experience. He poured out his heart to the folks. They worked with orphans quite a bit.
Okay, and there's a lot of those over there.
Mm-hmm.
So a
lot of my students at BYU, I think, had similar experiences. They went to countries that were poorer than the United States, and then they come back and the materialism just kind of hits you in the face. I remember one of my students saying that the first time she walked across a carpet after she'd been living on a dirt floor for 2 years, she just bawled. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. The interesting thing with, I think, Josh was, again, he, this is just when Russia was just beginning to get opened, and, you know, the church was just, you know, trying to build up there. And, you know, he interacted with the people extremely well, and he fell in love with the people.
Oh, yeah.
He's a very people
person. You can't help but do that.
But even the last part of his mission, I think the last 6 months, he got sent to Belarus, which is basically a third world country. And they took off their missionary back. It was a pure service missionary point at that point, which he really loved. And he worked with the people there and lost a ton of weight. I mean, he came home. I think he's only like, you know, he's like 6'2", 6'3", and he weighed like 170 pounds. And it was a hard mission, because there were times when they just didn't have enough to eat. They got poisoned one time, food poisoning, and and he almost got beat up by some skinheads. And
they dealt with mafia.
Oh, the mafia. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, just, we wouldn't take cabs over there, because a lot of them were run by the mafia. So,
yeah, the Russian mafia. Yeah.
Yeah. I was with a Christian guy, and he says, this is how you do it over here. And he just kind of hold his hand out, you know, and a car would stop, and he would negotiate with the driver, and that's how a lot of the Russians would pay for their gasoline, would be taking people around, and they'd take you right to the front door, so it was kind of nice. And it was a great experience, and you're right, you can't help but fall in love with the Russian people. I noticed that, however, when I was there in 93, 94, and 95, about the only people that ever smiled were the Christians, and of course, they were very few and far between. Oh, well, excuse me. The vendors on the streets, they smiled, because they were wanting to sell you something, but they're great people over there, so.
They smile in their homes, just not outside.
We saw missionaries mostly like outside, sometimes with easels, you know, easels.
Yes, and on the street.
On the mm-hmm. streets, mm-hmm. especially where you would go to get on the metro. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the subway system that they have, which is quite incredible over there. And we would see them there, talk with a few of them, because at that time, many of them did speak English. They had kind of a difficult time over in Russia, and I think part of the reason was, for at least what I heard, was the tea issue, because Russians all drink tea. because the water's horrible over there. Mm-hmm. And so they have to boil the water, and a lot of them drink tea, and I didn't like the coffee. It was so thick you could put a spoon in it, and they would practically eat the end off of it. And but the tea was great, and I think that maybe that's probably one of the reasons why they were having difficulty with Converse. Yeah. A lot of them didn't understand that.
So can you imagine that experience, and then the next brother had a similar experience in Denmark? It really connected Josh to the church, and Matt's experience in Denmark really connected him to the church, and then their third brother,
Micah,
did this strange thing.
Now, he was supposed to go to Mexico City. I mean, three sons going foreign. I mean,
we were really a righteous family.
I guess.
And, you know, you were talking about leadership positions and things. I want you to know that when I was a high counselor, I was the most humble high counselor that existed. So, okay. So
we laugh at that, but there's probably a lot of Mormons who actually say things like that. I had a young lady told me that. She says, "I am so humble." And I went, "I'm sorry, but humble people normally don't say that." You know, they just don't say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, three kids are going to go foreign. And now Matt goes to Denmark, and you say that was a positive experience for him.
Yes.
So this just gets him all the more excited about the church. Because I can imagine some missionary experiences could probably be horror stories for some when they get off their mission. They've just had bad experiences, maybe being pelted by Christians when they go door to door, trying to share their faith with them and challenging them. I would imagine after a time that would be difficult for some. And especially now that they're lowering the age to 18, that's probably going to be a nightmare, I'm kind of predicting, for the Mormon church. 19's young enough, but 18, that's really young. These kids.
That's pretty young to be an elder.
Yeah, yeah, especially. So now we get to the story in your book. You're talking about Micah, supposed to go to Mexico City, ends up having a collapsed lung.
Yeah, very strange experience. He's playing basketball in the MTC, and he said there wasn't even any physical contact. All of a sudden, he felt like someone had shot him with a gun, and his lung collapsed.
And that experience is going to really change everything. Mm. And so we're going to continue this conversation tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wondered where you can go in downtown Salt Lake City to browse the largest inventory of Christian books on the Mormon religion? Well, the answer is the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, located at 1358 South and West Temple, just across the street from the Smith Ballpark. Whether you're looking for a basic introduction or a more scholarly work, Sandra Tanner and her staff will assist you in finding the appropriate resources so you can better understand the LDS religion. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore also carries dozens of books that Sandra and her husband Gerald have written over the past five decades. This includes their comprehensive work, Mormonism, Shadow or Reality. So, once again, if you have questions about the LDS faith, there is always somebody behind the desk who would be more than happy to assist you. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and on Saturdays from 1 to 5. Remember, when in Salt Lake City, be sure to come check out the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, located right there at 1358 South and West Temple.